Hello, on this week's show, 2011 in Review, I'm joined by Eric Brannan and Susan Lewis.
This morning, we'll look back at the past year in the arts in our region and bring you the highlights of the news, issues and events, and the people who made them happen.
We've witnessed memorable performances and exhibitions and rediscovered many great perennial treasures. It's also been a year of change and surprises. All ahead this morning on Creatively Speaking.
Support for Creatively Speaking comes from the Pennsylvania Council on the Arts and the listeners of WRTI.
What would turn out to be a tumultuous year for the Philadelphia Orchestra began with an adventurous program exploring previously underexposed musical territories. The Inca Trails concert showcased some stunning visuals of the Andes and exotic sounds from composers from along the one-time Inca Trail. What was not so expected was the discovery of a local composer, Diego Luzuriaga, a 55-year-old Ecuadorian who's been living near Philadelphia for the past decade. His own singular journey to artistic maturity took him from the most remote villages of South America to the most rarefied circles of Paris. One particular experience was explored, the composer explained, in Responsario, the work performed by the Philadelphia Orchestra in January.
My idea was, can I compose a piece of music where there's a drumming from beginning to end? If you go to a folk festival in Ecuador, you go to the solstice festivities high up in the Andes, you hear drumming, not for 1 minute, not for 10 minutes, for 3 days. So I said, why not compose a piece on that vein? But instead of just one drum and one flute, you use a symphony orchestra.
. 2011 marked the 150th anniversary of the outbreak of the Civil War, the bloody five-year conflict that forged the modern United States. An exhibition at the Rosenbach Museum and Library in Philadelphia explored the events which tore America in two. The museum also commissioned composer Dave Burrell to create Portraits of Civil War Heroes. Burrell says documents from the exhibition helped shape a nocturne for Robert E. Lee.
The fashion world has long been known to have self-destructive tendencies. But could it be tragic on a Shakespearean scale? That was the question raised by the Opera Company of Philadelphia's February production of Gounod's Romeo and Juliet, with the Capulets and Montagues as rival modern haute couture houses. With many operatic casts, audiences would have to do an awful lot of squinting to imagine the singers as semi-anorexic runway models. In this production, Eileen Perez and Stephen Costello were in the lead roles on the strength of their voices. Yet no one was happier than costume designer Richard St. Clair that this real-life married couple are also handsome, even svelte.
Sometimes my job is to take some 50-year-old woman and make her look like a 16-year-old virgin, and then I have some 22-year-old hot chick from Curtis playing her mother. And this time, these people are really cast with love to really look like the characters they're playing. I'm so thankful for this cast.
Meanwhile, an Irish theater company that's been casting plays by predominantly Irish writers for over a century announced plans for closer ties with Philadelphia. Founded in 1904, the Abbey Theatre was the first state-supported theatre in the English-speaking world. Its mission, says director Fiach MacAneill, has always been to support the creation of works that incorporate the vernacular of the age and express Irish social and political concerns.
Our job is to reflect and engage Irish society. That's what I have to wake up every morning thinking. So the promise I make to the citizen or the visitor is if they come to the Abbey, they should get a sense of what people are talking about. They should get a sense of what the world is about. They should get a sense of the big issues of the day.
Right about the same time that Natalie Portman was picking up the Oscar for Best Actress for her role as a crazed ballet dancer in the psychological thriller Black Swan, Pennsylvania Ballet, over a dozen of whose dancers were in the hit film, was reprising its much-lauded Christopher Wheeldon-created production of Swan Lake. And just like the ballerina in the blockbuster movie, Lauren Fadley was plucked from the ballet corps to take center stage.
Life is kind of imitating art. I thought it was a joke at first. I thought they were like, this was a publicity stunt, but no, they assured me this was real. It's awesome because I started off learning the core of this ballet, so I was with all my friends, so now that I'm doing the lead, it's just nice to know they're all going to be out there with me.
In March, alums from Philadelphia's Astral Artists Advocacy and Training Program for Young Musicians performed a new work for harp, flute, viola, soprano and percussion by the Pulitzer Prize-winning composer Aaron J. Kernis. Astral commissioned L'Arte del Danza as the culmination of a two-year-long stint as composer-in-resident with Astral for Kernis. The Philadelphia native had enjoyed the 2 years back in his hometown and said it had given him a chance to flex all of his artistic muscles.
Well, the musicians can pretty much do anything, and I really felt very, very free to both have some of my most challenging works played by them and write a big new piece for these terrific alums of the Astral program.
While Gucci, Armani, and Versace are familiar names, even to those who don't follow fashion, less well-known in America is the still-active Roberto Cappucci, a designer who veered away from the commercial circuit to create his art. In March, the Philadelphia Museum of Art opened Roberto Cappucci, Art into Fashion. Museum director Timothy Rubb said that Cappucci helped change the way the world thought about both fashion and the designer's homeland in the aftermath of World War II.
Italy arose from that, and one of the ways it became prominent in the world was through design. Whether it was Italian art, or Italian automobiles, or Italian fashion, the Italian miracle, the 50s and the 60s, was led by aesthetics and by design, and by designers like Cappucci.
April saw the first Philadelphia International Festival of the Arts. The 25-day multi-event festival felt like both an overwhelming artistic monstrosity and the chance to experience the kind of creative collaborations that don't come around every day. The artistic premise of PIFA 2011 was the hotbed of arts and culture that was Paris between 1910 and 1920. Festival events celebrated art from that era and presented new work inspired by art from a century ago, said the festival's artistic producer, Barbara Silverstein.
I think one of the things that first pushed us in that direction was thinking that 100 years ago was when Stravinsky and all those other wonderful artists worked together at the Ballet Russe to create these masterpieces that still have continued to influence the way we do things and listen to things and see things today.
No one would have chosen to see the Philadelphia Orchestra Board file for Chapter 11 protection under the bankruptcy laws, yet hearings in federal court began in April. The orchestra management was projecting a multi-million dollar gap between income and expenses in the current financial year. Chapter 11 provides a process for reorganization, which would allow the orchestra to continue to function and perform concerts while receiving a measure of protection from its creditors.
The filing came in the wake of stalled labor contract talks between management and musicians, with orchestra members strongly protesting against the moves towards bankruptcy. And those musicians on the board were the only ones to vote against the decision to file. They claimed that an earlier offer of reductions in salary and benefits, if taken up by management, would have made bankruptcy protection unnecessary.
The orchestra's management maintained that the long-term health of the organization would improve only with radical changes to its contractual commitments to the Kimmel Center and to Peter Nero and the Philly Pops, but most importantly to its pension obligations. Management sought and eventually succeeded in moving from a defined benefit plan administered by the musicians' union to a defined contribution plan that would lock in the administration's commitment but make benefits to the musicians variable. The latest word from the Philadelphia Orchestra is that it expects to be out of Chapter 11 protection in the spring.
The orchestra's 2010-2011 season ended with The Damnation of Faust by Hector Berlioz, featuring the official Philadelphia debut of Susan Graham. It was years ago when the mezzo-soprano last sang in the city, when she also learned a new skill offstage.
I did sing with the Philadelphia Orchestra. I sang Mozart C minor Mass. I stepped in for Catherine Marshall a million years ago. But I do remember that I had just gotten rollerblades and I learned to skate going around Rittenhouse Square. And then I went on to become quite an avid rollerblader after that. I only fell down once, and I still have a scar to prove it.
Another star of the Metropolitan Opera, bass Eric Owens, was also in Philadelphia in May to launch the start of its Mahler 100, Schoenberg 60 project. The Dolce Suono Chamber Ensemble brought in the Philadelphia-born Owens, who sang Mahler's Das Lied von der Erde in Chinese.
I don't have that textual sort of grounding that you marry the text to the notes and it sort of you can learn it easier that way. I found it with the Chinese that I'll hammer away at it for hours and I'll come back and look at it and it's like I'm looking at it for the very first time. It's kind of odd.
Innovation was also at the heart of the Crossing Choir's Month of Moderns Festival in June. Director Donald Nally says the Contemporary Choir's central mission is about engaging audiences on an emotional level.
I have a lot of people that come to concerts and say, I discovered things I didn't know, or I always learn something when I'm here. But, you know, I think largely they're not talking about the educational value of it. They're talking about sounds that meant something to them that they would not have otherwise, A, heard, or B, recognized as having any relevance to them.
The historic Hedgerow Theater in Media, Pennsylvania, continued to pursue its distinctive vision. Hedgerow was founded in 1923 as a residential repertory theater, where an ensemble company of artists and residents prepare several productions at once, rotating performances. Today, in the spirit of its history, Hedgerow continues as a theater community in which everyone assumes multiple roles. Operations manager Zoran Kovcic also builds and designs sets and has acted in over 150 shows.
We don't create or build actors, we build theater people. So when someone new joins us, we find out what other talents and skills they have. But just because you happen to be in box office doesn't mean you're not going to be painting the set, or outside gardening, or helping to clean the bathrooms before the show.
While Hedgerow is housed in an old grist mill dating from 1840, the Michener Museum's home in Doylestown, Pennsylvania, was built as a prison in 1884. This summer, it hosted the first retrospective of the paintings of Bucks County native William T. Trigo, who worked despite severe physical disability, most likely caused by polio. Curator Joseph Eckhard said Trigo was a strong advocate for himself, to the point where he filed suit against the Pennsylvania Academy of the Fine Arts when one of his paintings was judged to be the best in a competition, but not worthy of first prize.
So they said, yours is the best, you get the third prize, it's a silver medal, congratulations. And when they didn't reward him with what he thought he deserved, the first prize, he sued them. So he actually sued the Pennsylvania Academy. And it was a great scandal, enough that it made the New York Times. It went all the way to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, and the Academy won in the end.
The painting was his 1883 work, The March to Valley Forge, a 6x3 foot oil on canvas portraying General George Washington watching over a procession of troops in harsh winter conditions.
Stories about the nation's first president were everywhere this summer as the National Constitution Center spearheaded a citywide celebration of the man with its exhibition, Discover the Real George Washington. Constitution Center President David Eisner said Washington has been elevated to iconic status, but understanding his life, his values, and his humanity is equally important.
People forget how incredible it was that he gave up power twice. First as the all-powerful general, and then as the all-powerful president. When people wanted him to take authoritarian, in some case royal power.
Marriage in America was explored at the Wilma Theater in James Brawley's dark comedic one-man show, Life in a Marital Institution, 20 Years of Monogamy and One Terrifying Hour. A former corporate speechwriter, Brawley came up with the idea for the show after experiencing first-person storytelling for the first time.
Long story short, stumbled one night into The Moth at Joe's Pub, and there was a storytelling group doing extemporaneous stories, 10, 12, 14 minutes long, and that was the beginning for me. I thought, this is how I can actually do what I love to do and develop it.
Curtis alum composer Giancarlo Menotti would have turned 100 in July. Mark Obert Thorne, the Philadelphia-based sound restorationist, was familiar only with Menotti's children's opera, Amahl and the Night Visitors, when he began working on a new series of original cast Menotti recordings for the Naxos label. His reaction to Menotti was much the same as audiences some 60 years before.
One moonstone to make you sleep, one red coral to hear your woes.
I found Menotti to be very accessible, but at the same time, not overly simple.
Also in July, the National Association of Negro Musicians held its annual convention in Philadelphia, drawing performers such as mezzo-soprano Marietta Simpson. She talked about the importance of a supportive community.
I do believe that talent opens doors, but I think people are behind the doors that help open them. So someone over here can recognize a gift in you and really support that and nurture and put you in contact with other people. And somebody over here can be not so impressed. The problem sometimes gets that people are tired by the time the opportunity comes and they're not ready. And so they can't take full advantage of it. And life is funny. You know, one month you can be doing really, really well, and then 6 months later, you're thinking, does anybody know my name out there?
Local talent, Westchester, PA native Megan Miller, has had a high profile this year. Miller was featured in the Bard Summerscape production of The Loves of Danae in New York. Earlier this month, she sang the title role in Strauss's Daphne at the Vienna State Opera. So in demand is Miller right now that she often studies one role while singing another.
If I start listening to other recordings and disagreeing with their choices, I know that I'm almost ready. Which makes it hard to work with conductors sometimes.
In March, Megan Miller joins LyricFest for two performances in Philadelphia.
The Academy of Natural Sciences in Philadelphia explored the intersection of art and science with an exhibition of drawings and watercolors by its curator of entomology, Dan Oddie, who has newly identified more than 1,500 insects from around the world. He specializes in grasshoppers, which can be recognized by their physical features, and crickets, each species of which makes its own song.
The way they do it is to move one wing underneath the other, and on the underside of the top wing there's a little file, and on the leading edge of the underwing there's a scraper. And so what they do when they close the wing, it scrapes across this almost like you'd put your thumb across a comb, and then they can repeat that many times.
In September, the Philadelphia Orchestra was on a European festivals tour of Switzerland, Germany, Britain, Ireland, and France. In addition to performing to large audiences and great acclaim, some orchestra members took the time to play some more intimate venues. Concertmaster David Kim discovered the Gravity Bar atop the Guinness Factory when he was planning his sightseeing trips in Dublin.
I was just signing up for tickets for a tour of the brewery. And then I was looking around the website, and they said, perform at the brewery. And then they even have a little YouTube clip of some high school band or something. And I said, hey, we're the Philadelphia Orchestra. We'd like to try. And they said, we'd be delighted to have you. Come and play.
While the orchestra was performing across the Atlantic, Philadelphia was hosting its annual festivals of cutting-edge performances, the Live Arts and Philly Fringe. This year, its creators began planning for an expanded year-round presence in the city with the purchase of a 10,000-square-foot building near the Delaware River waterfront. Festival co-founder Nick Stuccio said having a year-round program will open up greater possibilities.
We have currently a 16-day window, and if work is on tour during that time, we can bring it in. But that rarely, if ever, happens. Many companies don't tour in September. But now, if a really fantastic company is coming to New York or Washington, we can add a run on in Philadelphia. It's a much greater economy of scale.
While the Fringe brought a slew of convention-breaking performances in some unorthodox venues around the city, a production that was arguably even more adventurous took audiences onto the Schuylkill River for a dance theater piece that examined the river's role in Philadelphia history. The work's creator, Ali Vidic, said the waterway offered audiences perspectives that a stage show never could.
I want people to be like, I live in a beautiful place and I didn't even know it because I haven't even been on the river. And I want them to just see it in a new way and realize that it's something that we can't take for granted. And it's not just like a geographic point. It's actually a part of our culture.
The Penn Museum was also working to change people's perception of place, but on a grander scale. Reinterpreting its vast African collections resulted in Imagine Africa. The exhibition is populated by numerous message boards on which visitors are encouraged to comment on what else they'd like to know about various subjects. Director of Exhibits Kate Quinn said the goal is to engage the community in the curatorial process.
We knew that there are many different ways and many, many stories that we could tell with the objects and with our collection, but what's the best way? So we decided to open it up to the community and get a sense of what our neighbors want to see and maybe start a relationship with them that maybe has been struggling or didn't exist before.
This year, the Curtis Institute of Music doubled the size of its campus with the opening of Lenfest Hall. The new high-tech facility supplements the historic main building and includes a 3,200-square-foot rehearsal hall, living and dining areas, and teaching studios with recording capabilities. Institute President Roberto Diaz said that Curtis today must continue its musical training, but also prepare students to face a changing world.
One of the things that I've always felt very strongly about is to try to really wake up the sense of curiosity of the students, you know, make them aware of as many things as possible that go on around them. You know, we really want the students to understand that music, in a sense, never has happened in a vacuum. And, you know, to really make them realize that, you know, they have tremendous responsibilities that go beyond how well they play.
Curtis Institute graduate Long Long was in Philadelphia for a performance with the Philadelphia Orchestra that was simulcast to over 500 movie theaters. The concert was one of hundreds of engagements the superstar pianist takes on every year. He says he's careful to heed some good advice he received a long time ago.
Don't burn yourself. Don't play too much or practice too much. It's hard, but you need to be aware to balance. But always don't burn yourself. Not worth it.
Long Long wasn't the only well-known Curtis alum back in Philadelphia this October. Violinist Lila Josefowitz was named the Philadelphia Orchestra's Artist in Residence. She's also a recent recipient of a MacArthur Genius Award, which she says has not changed her basic policy of always performing a mix of old and new music.
One leads to another very, very clearly, and the more standard works are refreshed by the newer works, so they do fit. People, I think, in the last 20 years had sort of wanted to compartmentalize the newer stuff from the more standard things. And, you know, this person does this and that person does that. And so I think I'm really trying to just make it more accepted by all.
In November, the Philadelphia Orchestra's music director designate, Yannick Nézet-Séguin, was in town to conduct a series of concerts. At the tail end of a tumultuous year for the ensemble, Yannick was looking forward.
This wasn't planned this way, of course, but I'm very happy to carry this on my shoulders. It's not something that puts undue pressure on me. No, on the contrary, I think I know that if I do well what I have to do, I can help in my own way.
2011 was a breakthrough year for Philadelphia-based soprano Michelle Johnson. The Academy of Vocal Arts resident artist won the Metropolitan Opera's 2011 National Council auditions and began scheduling debuts in both the US and Europe. Ahead of the Academy of Vocal Arts' November production of Offenbach's Le Comte d'Offman, the 28-year-old Johnson said she was ready to move on to roles typically reserved for veteran singers.
I don't want to jump into things that are too massive, but I don't want to hold myself like too little. Like I don't want to be bound by small roles just because of age. People think that young singers should only sing certain repertoire, but I need repertoire that will help me to grow into the repertoire that I will do later on.
Another AVA soprano, Eileen Perez, made her Covent Garden debut singing Violetta in La Traviata at the Royal Opera House in December. Performing at such a high level alongside some of the best in the business has only made her more confident.
There's nothing better than being next to a great singer that, I mean, it makes you feel better in the sense that you know you don't have to be nervous for them. You can fully sing out. You don't have to worry about them. You worry about yourself, and you know their level of excellence makes everyone play better.
Also in December, a new musical ensemble of woodwind, brass, and percussion debuted. Artistic director Virginia Allen said she named the group the Philadelphia Wind Symphony rather than call it a band to reflect a wide-ranging repertoire that people may not associate with bands.
Some people don't realize that there is this whole set of repertoire that's as serious as any orchestral or chamber music that you would want to hear. And it explores different colors than you're going to hear in other kinds of ensembles.
Also earlier this month, one very accomplished wind player, the Philadelphia Orchestra's principal flute Jeffrey Kaner, explained that a career as a soloist held little appeal for him, not just because of the somewhat limited repertoire available for his instrument, but because of what he would miss about being a member of the orchestra.
To this day, when I'm sitting in the middle of Brahms' First Symphony, it's difficult for me
to keep my composure because it's a very emotional experience. And it's been over 30 years that I've been doing this. So to give that up in order to play, I could mention several composers, but you might not have heard of them. It's just, for me, it's not really an option. Even Mozart, I mean, we have such limited repertoire, Mozart, two Mozart concertos and several quartets. I've found that to really understand how to play Mozart, for me it was necessary to be playing the piano concertos, the symphonies, operas, with conductors, pianists, singers who really knew Mozart. I don't think I could ever have really had a comprehension of how Mozart should sound if I only knew him from practicing alone in a room.
Also in December, we spoke with a pianist and conductor who has gained a well-deserved international reputation for his unique interpretations of Mozart, Christian Zacharias, who gave a recital for the Philadelphia Chamber Music Society, said that though he always wants his music to be aesthetically pleasing, that's never his starting point.
I hate pretty, you know, because this is the easy way, you know, to sell you something, you know. Beauty is also something we look for, and of course, if it comes with it, it's a bonus. But just to go for this kind of beauty thing is very dangerous.
And those were just some of the highlights of 2011. We hope you've enjoyed the past year in the arts and look forward to bringing you all that's best in 2012. Enjoy the rest of the holidays and have a happy new year.